Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Jeff Byers. And Jeff, I've been talking about it for weeks. We are inching closer and closer. It is finally game week. Those are the greatest words in the world, aren't they?
You are not kidding. Yep, to actually have a football game on hand and to be in the midst of game week, as somebody following it, it is a lot of fun. I cannot imagine the excitement right now in that Penn State locker room among the players and coaches when you have a season with as high of expectations as this one has, all of the grind, as we call it, throughout the offseason. This is where it pays off, and it is just a thrill to have football season finally back on hand.
Well, this is going to be a season preview edition of our show, and it's what we're going to be doing every week, with every show this week with Dustin, T, Frank, Andy. We're going to talk about the season and this game. Let's start with this, Jeff. Is this the most excitement for a season in the entire Franklin era?
I think it is. I mean, I think there were some high expectations in 2017 to see what they could do coming off of the Big Ten championship. But I don't know that you, as a fan, have felt as comfortable or confident with all phases of a team coming back and feeling like there are as few questions as there are. And there are still a few questions about how this season is going to play out. The other thing that I think is leading to a lot of confidence right now is the depth. I mean, I don't think there's any question that this is the most depth that this program has had, certainly since the sanctions came into play. And even at key positions, I mean, obviously, I think a lot of folks are feeling like Drew Aller is kind of a key here. But I don't think there's you're in panic mode if you're Penn State if he goes down with what, again, everything we're hearing about Bo Pribula and the way he has been able to handle everything. So, obviously you're not wishing for any injuries anywhere, but I don't know that there's a spot there that you're like, well, if they go down there, look out, this season's going to go down the tubes.
I felt, Jeff, that the excitement is warranted mostly because they have more elite players on this team than any team I could remember. And it feels like it's at every level. Defensively, you know, the defensive backs, you have a Kalen King. You have star linebackers. You have the star defensive ends. You've got a superstar offensive lineman, a superstar running back, a star tight end, and fingers crossed, a star at quarterback. So I have no doubt it's a really good team, but is it going to be Drew Aller is the difference between a really good team and the elite team, as to use the word that James Franklin uses?
Yeah, I don't know that that's even necessarily the case, Jim, because I think because of all of that talent, listen, if Drew Aller does emerge as the superstar many are projecting, all the better, but I don't think Penn State needs him to be that this season to have an electric year. They need him to be solid. They need him to be good. They need him to not be the reason they lose. But I don't think going into the season that you're thinking, listen, Drew Aller is going to have to win this team a few games for them to get where they need to be. Now, could it play out that way? Obviously, it could. We got to see how everything goes. But with what I'm expecting this defense to be, and with what I'm expecting this running game to be, and with the talent of the receivers and the tight end, again, I don't think Drew Aller has to be the superstar and go out and win a game. I just think he needs to be a guy that doesn't lose a game for you. And if he is, again, what many are projecting, and certainly everybody in the Penn State fandom is hoping, then all the better. I mean, you want him to be a guy that can go out and win you games, and it puts you in even that elite status to go to your term. But I think this team can be elite without him being, you know, having that superstar season. Again, he has to be good. He can't be the reason you're losing games. He can't be turning the ball over left and right. But, you know, if he takes care of the ball and he's solid at quarterback, and again, it's hard to imagine that he won't be at least that, but I just think then everything else is in place, this team will be just fine.
You mentioned wide receivers there. If there's question marks that the fans seem to have, it is wide receiver and defensive tackle. And I think there's a good comparison with the two of them. It feels like there's a lot of numbers. It feels like there's depth at both positions. I'm not sure there's any standouts at either position. Let's start with wide receiver. It appears Keandre Lambert-Smith and Trey Wallace have differentiated themselves from the pack. Then it's Cephas, Saunders, Evans, Clifford, Mega, McLean. Is there a difference maker in that group? Is there going to be someone you think will step up among them?
Yeah, I mean, you know, to me, the two, well, actually, there's probably three guys that are really intriguing. Cephas is one, because I think when the initial announcement was made, right, it was almost presumed that Cephas was going to be kind of the guy, even supplanting Keandre as the top receiver. And, you know, he's certainly not getting that type of hype now going into the season. So I think it's just going to be interesting to see how and where he fits into the mix over the course of the season and just even in that rotation. To me, the two guys, though, that I think are going to step up and be real factors kind of right out of the gate are Harrison Wallace and Amari Evans. I mean, those are the two guys to me that athletically I think have a chance to be elite. As always with that receiver position, it comes down to the consistency, right? And you know, you can have guys that make the spectacular catch and then drop the routine balls from time to time. What you need is the guys, obviously, that can do both. The one thing, well, one of the things that I think helps this receiving core, aside from obviously if Drew Aller has the breakout season that we're hoping, but listen, this tight end room is fantastic. And I think that this team can utilize and will utilize the running backs in that passing game too. And I think that's going to help open some things up for this receiving core. The other thing that I think helps this receiving core is that, as you said, there is not, at least going into the season, that one guy that, hey, you know, other teams got to account for this guy. So I don't think any of these guys are going to get, at least out of the gate here, a ton of attention. And again, I think this is a good room. I mean, I think there are a lot of really talented receivers here. And if you're not putting them in double team type of situations, and I don't think there will be a lot early, because I think early on teams want to see, hey, what can Penn State do with the passing game? You know, Penn State is counting on being able to run the ball effectively. And I think you're going to see a lot of teams, at least out of the gate here, try to stack up at the line of scrimmage and challenge Penn State to throw the football.
I do think also having Drew Aller at quarterback, a guy who could make that deep pass, I think he can do that much better than Sean Clifford could. That will make a difference. But I want to hit on, you make a great point about how much pressure will there be off of the wide receivers, because you do have to concern yourself with Theo Johnson, who I know Penn State fans know who he is and what he's about. This is the opportunity with Brenton Strange gone for Theo Johnson to be the guy and be a star at tight end. And that's the kind of thing that makes a big difference for everybody else on the team on the offensive side.
Yeah, and listen, they have depth there at tight end too, to go back to the earlier conversation. And yes, I mean, Johnson has a chance to have just an absolutely fantastic season. And the thing I like about him, Jim, is it feels like anymore, increasingly you're getting these pass catching tight ends, period. Theo Johnson is a great pass catcher. Make no mistake about that. But this dude can block. I mean, this is the, you know, Kyle Brady type of tight end in terms of everything you want in your tight end, this guy can do. But I think that room, I think three deep, they're pretty comfortable there with what these guys are capable of doing. And so if you get into a situation where, hey, you know what, the way this defense is playing and we're having some problems, you can keep him in and use him as an extra blocker. And I don't think it's the worst thing. And then have him as a release valve, but he certainly obviously can be a big part of the, and I think early on will be a big part of this pass offense, because he is just a really tough matchup for any defense. I mean, he's that guy that you want where it's going to be really hard for a linebacker to keep up with him. And it's going to be really hard for anybody in the secondary to be able to physically take him on.
You do realize, Jeff, by using Kyle Brady as the comparison, you are showing your age. Okay.
Just well, more and more.
And by the way, and I know we're talking about this season, but that tight end position is in such good hands. Before the season started and we heard so many good things about Khalil Dinkins, we were talking about the true freshman, Andrew Rapelier, who, if you saw his film, if you talk to the scouts, absolutely love him. And the funny thing is, guess what? Next year, there's another one coming with Luke Reynolds, who is probably even more highly regarded. So tight end is in good hands. The other thing you brought up that I really hope they do more of, you mentioned the running backs who were true freshmen last year getting more involved in the passing game. If that happens, Jeff, I just think that takes this offense to another level.
Well, and it goes back to what you were saying about Aller with the long ball. When you have that as a real threat in your offense, right, I think it is going to give them an opportunity to get those running backs with those swing passes in space and create some really big opportunities on relatively easy plays, you know, for the quarterbacks and the quarterback and the offensive line. And the other thing that with this team that I just think we need to appreciate is having that coaching staff basically back intact. I think that's a big part of the season coming up here too.
All right, very good, Jeff. We're not done talking about the season preview. Next segment, we're going to pin Jeff down and get a season prediction. Stay tuned.
Hey, Penn State fans, here is your chance to take something off your bucket list. That's right, Go PSU RV is offering a full range of RV setups ready for a weekend of great tailgating at their Lions Den, which is the closest single-game RV overnight lot to Beaver Stadium. You can arrive anytime Friday afternoon, stay until Sunday morning, avoiding all that traffic. Don't miss this unique opportunity. Go online to gopsurv.com and reserve your RV today.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number two. He's Jeff Byers. I'm Jim Galante. It is game week. We're doing our season preview. Next segment, we'll get into the West Virginia game preview, but let's pick up where we left off. We were finishing up with the offense and the things that we were looking for there, but I'd also mentioned as far as positions that fans are a bit concerned about, defensive tackle seems to be that other spot, Jeff, and I keep using the analogy to wide receiver. There's a lot of guys there. There's a lot of depth, but who is going to stand out? Is there anyone there that can stand out for this team?
Yeah, I think they're going to be really solid there. And again, the size is the big thing that James Franklin has been wanting and kind of harping on. You know, it really did catch my attention when James Franklin touted this defensive line in one of those preseason get-togethers as having a chance to be I forget it. I'm going to paraphrase, but he basically said it has a chance to be the best or one of the best in the entire country. And I certainly think this is going to be an improved unit, and I think it has a chance to be good. But man, my ears perked up because Franklin does not throw out that type of accolade casually. And I think, you know, Hakeem Beamon is a guy that, again, from everything we're hearing, and he's played solidly, but has really bulked up, you know, Kaziah Izzard, the same thing. And I think, you know, those two, Durant is another one. I mean, those three, I think, are probably the three that they're going to be relying on out of the gate to kind of carry the load there. And then probably the player, single player on this team that I'm most interested to see what happens this season is Jordan Vandenberg, and whether or not all of the weight room heroics translate into some on-field performance. So listen, I think this D-line and the D-tackles in particular can be great, and I'm basing that in part because of what James Franklin is saying he's seen. I think for me, the big question there is, can they get the consistent play, and can those guys replace the leadership that a PJ Mustipher provided on this team? I think from a production standpoint, these guys can probably match what Penn State had last season, if not exceed it. But I do think that leadership component is big. And I think the fact that they had Mustipher in there last year and they can learn from watching and observing the way he handled both his responsibilities and his his teammates trying to inspire them, I think is significant. I think the same thing, you know, with Drew Aller having a chance to be behind Sean Clifford last year. I just think having the benefit of that leadership from last year is one of the reasons I'm really high on what this team can do this season.
And Jeff, to continue the analogy from wide receiver to defensive tackle, you talked about the tight ends taking some of the load off the wide receivers. If you got to concern yourself with Theo Johnson and the rest of that group at tight end, it could open things up for the wide receivers. I think there's an argument to be made, the same thing on the defensive line with those defensive ends. Now, if you remember a year ago, Adisa Isaac was coming off an injury. Denai Dennis sat, and he was the year before, he was playing high school football. And yeah. Chop Robinson was off in Maryland. You know, this was the transfer portal gap. We had no idea what we had there with those three players. Well, now we know what we have there, and it's pretty darn good. Don't the offenses against them really have to focus on those outside guys and perhaps open something up for the tackles on the inside?
Yeah, I think absolutely. And listen, I think having this linebacking core that Penn State has too is also very significant. They've got a lot of speed there and a lot of dynamic players that, and obviously Abdul Carter leads the way there. But and I think they have some versatility there with the linebackers too. And I'm going to be really interested to see as the season goes on. I think schematically, Penn State can do a lot of different things. I think with the size that they do have now in the interior of the defensive line and the speed they have and the athleticism kind of across the board with the defensive ends, linebackers, and secondary, I think if they want to, they can beat you a lot of different ways and try to present matchup problems a lot of different ways. I think they can bring some guys from all over the field, really, with blitz packages and different matchups. And I think with Manny Diaz, I think they're going to disguise a lot of things where it's, oh boy, it looks like Penn State's bringing the house. And then, nope, listen, we're solid. We only need three or four guys on the rush. We know we got everything covered. It's just going to be fun to see, I think, with the talent that this team has on the defensive side of the ball, and now their familiarity with Manny Diaz and his familiarity with them, I just think it's almost limitless what you could see from this defense. And I think it's got to be a blast for Manny Diaz and for these players to kind of, all right, let's see what they're going to do if we throw this at them. Let's see what happens if we throw, you know, Abdul Carter outside and bring him over on this side. I think there's a lot of fun that these guys are going to be able to have, and a lot of havoc that I think they're going to create for opposing offenses.
If they can force teams into passing situations, look out. Let's do the overall picture here. Now, this is a team that was 10-2 last year through the regular season with the bowl game 11-2. Very, very, very good season. Penn State fans are anxious for the next step. Before we talk, though, about Michigan and Ohio State, any places on the rest of the schedule this team needs to be careful of, Jeff?
So what I've been telling people is it's the Big Ten. And, you know, how many times has Ohio State, in its great seasons, Big Ten championship seasons, but it stubs its toe somewhere? Unexpectedly, Purdue a couple of times. It is just really hard to get through a conference like the Big Ten unscathed. And I think the coaching is as strong as it's ever been. And again, there's just not that talent gap that, there might have been in the 70s and 80s between these programs. And that's not to say that there isn't a talent gap. I mean, Penn State, Michigan, and Ohio State are, you know, on one level. And then talent-wise, there's a group in the next level. But that disparity between the two isn't so great that if the grade A talent, if you will, with those three teams, they're a little off on a given day, and you're going to be off at some point, not because you're overlooking anybody, not because you didn't take practice seriously that week, just because you're a human being and you're comprised of a group of human beings, and you're going to have a day where, yep, things just aren't clicking. And if that happens to be a day where a team like Maryland or Iowa is firing on all cylinders, yeah, you could be in trouble. Maryland, to me, is the one team. Just because of how hungry that team is, I think Penn State matches up well, and I think Penn State wins that game. I don't look at it as a trap game, quote-unquote. But I do think if you're looking at a game where, hey, if Penn State's a little off and this team's on, look out. That, to me, is the game that stands out a little bit. That being said, am I sitting here chewing my fingernails over the Maryland-Penn State matchup? I'm not. I really do think at the end of the day, this is going to come down to Ohio State and Michigan. I think the 1-0 mentality that James Franklin has is going to serve this year's team exceptionally well. And listen, they haven't proven anything yet. And so I think this is a really hungry team. I'm not one of those worried that this team is going to get too caught up in the preseason hype. Because they just haven't proven anything yet. This program has never been to the playoffs. This team hasn't, none of the players on this team have played for a Big Ten championship. So that people can say all they want, talk you up all you want. And listen, the other part of it is, truthfully, they could still have a chip on their shoulder for all of the hype that Penn State has. They're predicted to finish third in their division. When you look at the rankings, it is Michigan, Ohio State, and then Penn State. So really, at the end of the day, despite all of the hype and all of the expectations, James Franklin can say, hey, nobody thinks you're going to beat either of these teams. Nobody thinks you're better than third in our division, let alone that you're going to go win the Big Ten championship. So I think this team can push all the right buttons from a motivational standpoint. And listen, I just think this team is as talented as we've been saying, as any we've had in these parts in a long, long time. And I think talent and focus will prevent this team from stubbing its toe somewhere along the way. Not to say that it can't happen. Again, it's sports. It's fun. The Big Ten is wild. But I really don't think that's going to happen. I think if there are losses to be found, it'll be exactly where you're expecting them with either Ohio State or Michigan.
So, Jeff, all right. So now let's talk Michigan and Ohio State. How did those two games play out?
It is funny, Jim, because obviously it is really hard to win in Columbus, and it has been darn near impossible, it seems like, for Penn State to find the winning formula in Columbus. But if you are asking me going into the season which of the two games concerns me the most, it is certainly not Ohio State. And it is not that I don't think Ohio State is a great team, because I do, and I think they'll be right there. I just think Penn State matches up really, really well. They have over the years. They've matched up as well as anybody else in the Big Ten with Ohio State, but I think even better this year. And we've talked about it many times over the years. I mean, Penn State, to a large degree, has constructed this program with the idea we need to beat the Buckeyes. Michigan is a different animal. And, you know, we talked about that interior of the defensive line, how that group in particular matches up against Michigan. I think you can throw out what that team does against everybody else in terms of physicality and all of that. It is going to be what happens that day. And obviously you like the fact that the game's at Beaver Stadium, but if you're asking me the toughest matchup for Penn State going into the season, I don't think there's any question that it's Michigan going into the year that poses the biggest threat to ruining the possibility of an unblemished record.
It's interesting, the conversation when I talk to a lot of different people about Michigan and Ohio State. A lot of folks say exactly what you do. Penn State matches up better with against Ohio State, but that game is at Columbus, where the Michigan game is at home. So it really is kind of a quandary for those folks like me who think they'll split to decide who they're going to be and who they may lose to. Stick around. Next segment, I will put the proverbial gun to Jeff's head, force him to give us a season-long prediction, and we'll also talk about West Virginia.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Jeff. I'm Jim. We were talking about the Penn State season. We're going to get into the West Virginia game shortly. But as promised, Jeff, here's the gun to your head. give me the final record. Give me your prediction for this season for this Penn State team.
I really do think this team has a chance to go undefeated. I know it is so hard to do in a conference like the Big Ten, and that Michigan matchup just does worry me. And listen, there's so many things that you can't predict going into the year right now in terms of injury situations and how these team seasons are actually going to unfold. But looking at it now on paper, I think even though Penn State's at home and I think we'll be undefeated going into that Michigan game, it is just the one game that I really struggle with. And so I'm going to go 11-1. And I'm going to do it while wincing at myself because I really want to predict 12-0. And I do think this team can do that. I really do. But that Michigan game, to me, is just – it's one of those – it's almost – I think you can do it. I think this team thinks it can do it. But until you do it, until you go out and knock them off, it's – there's got to be that little seed of doubt. And there's that seed of doubt for me going into the season as to whether or not they can get that done. I really don't think this team will stumble anywhere else other than Ohio State and Michigan. And again, both those games to me are toss-ups, you know, more so because it's in Columbus with Ohio State. I'd feel really, really good about Penn State's chances against the Buckeyes if that game was at Beaver Stadium. But I just think matchup-wise, Penn State is in really good shape for Ohio State, and I think they will go in there and knock off the Buckeyes. And again, I certainly think it is well within the realm of possibility that Penn State takes care of Michigan as well. But I'm just going to say 11-1 at the end of the day. Penn State, I think, still will end up playing for the Big Ten championship, and I think Penn State does get into its first playoff experience at the conclusion of this season.
You know, Jeff, it's interesting. if these games were on a neutral field, I feel like the spread should be a pick 'em, each one of the games among all three of the teams. And the difference maker should be that playing Michigan at home. If they were reversed, Ohio State at home, I'm with you. I would think that would be the win. The fact that it's the other way around, I guess it's just easier. Maybe it's the compromise pick to make them go 1-1 against the two of them, but that's what I have. All right, let's shift our focus then to West Virginia. Based on your pick for the season, I know that means you're picking Penn State to win the game. But for this game, first off, despite Penn State being a 20-point favorite, I'm just amazed at how different it is to be playing a Power 5 team. Maybe a little bit it's the familiarity for us old-timers having West Virginia come in. It's a night game. NBC's first night game, Big Ten game. But the excitement level for this game, it's so different than if they were opening with Delaware or UMass. You're in State College. Does it feel that way in town the same way?
It does. And I think for some of the old-time fans, and I have to put myself in that category now. But, you know, the matchup with West Virginia is kind of fun. It's a throwback to, glory days, if you will. I think the 1980s largely are rightfully perceived as the glory days for Penn State football. And that West Virginia series and Don Nealon was a big part of that. So I think it's neat from that regard to get back to an old school traditional rival to open up the season. And yeah, just having a Power 5 team, I think, does make it different. At the end of the day, though, Jim, I got to tell you, I am really struggling to see how this game is competitive. I don't think West Virginia has an advantage at any single position on the field. If you go through the, you know, hey, how does Penn State secondary match up with their receivers? Or, you know, how does West Virginia's quarterback stack up with Penn State's offensive line? I struggle to see an area where you're like, oh, West Virginia definitely has advantage there. There's a couple spots where maybe it might be almost kind of even. But, I mean, I just think Penn State across the board is better. Then you throw into the fact, I think from a coaching standpoint, West Virginia has an okay staff. I think this staff that James Franklin has put together here, when you look at the coaches and the fact that they're the key ones are back, and where you do have somebody new, quote unquote, like a Deion Barnes, that's a win. I think any way you look at it, I think Penn State has the coaching advantage. I think Penn State has the experience advantage. The fact that you're home, a night game, to me, every intangible goes Penn State's way. Every actual advantage goes Penn State's way. And I don't see how this game ends up being. I don't think I give the 20 points and feel very comfortable doing so. I just don't think West Virginia matches up in any way, shape, or form. And I think this crowd is gearing to go. And I think it's going to end up being a great opening game because of that excitement level, because of the expectations. And I think the headline Sunday morning will be along the lines of, yep, Penn State's who we thought they were. Look out. The rest of the Big Ten may be in trouble. I think Penn State is going to put on a show and a half on Saturday night. And I don't think they're going to do anything to quell the soaring expectations right now in State College about what this team is capable of doing.
I'm in agreement with you, and I usually don't like to bet on a game with a better than 20-point spread. But here's the other part of this. West Virginia has that weak Big 12-type defense where, you know, they're bad by Big 12 standards. So Penn State offense and Mike Yurcich, I think he's going to find a way to just light them up. On the other side of the ball, it's going to be a new starter for West Virginia. I'm just thinking about the first time they're in third and long, and the Beaver Stadium crowd does what the Beaver Stadium crowd does.
Yeah.
I start reaching the point where I start feeling sorry for opposing quarterbacks. And that's not my normal state, Jeff, feeling sorry for an opponent. But that's where I think it could get really ugly in this game. But getting back to your thoughts instead of mine, let's talk about this offense. It is the new starter now. It's Drew Aller. I'm sure he's going to be excited beyond belief, you know, coming out again for that same reason. First start, it's that Penn State crowd. You're Mike Yurcich. How do you handle that? How do you handle this offense? What are you looking to accomplish, especially early in the game?
Yeah, I just think I'm excited to see how Penn State approaches this first game, because I think that the thought is, listen, with Penn State knowing what it has at running back and feeling good about the offensive line, and I think they match up well with there, as you said, with the West Virginia defense, I think Penn State can come out and just take control of the line of scrimmage and run it down West Virginia's throat. And they may very well do that. I just have a sneaking suspicion. If you're asking me my prediction for the first play of the game, I think it's going to be play action, and I think they're going to let Aller take a shot downfield and see if they can just electrify the crowd right out of the gate. I think West Virginia will be thinking run first, and I think you'll have a little play action with Singleton. And if they connect, and I'm right on this, look out. I just think it's going to be a really, really long night for the Mountaineers. I really like the way everything is shaping up here for this team this season. And I just, as much as I like the talent, and I love the talent on this team across the board, Jim, to me, the thing that makes me so confident and comfortable that this is going to be a big year, and whether or not it's undefeated or not, you know, we'll see. But I think this team is going to do some great things, also in part because of that coaching staff. The staff, including the advisors now that James Franklin has, it is, I mean, I put it right there with Georgia, Alabama, whoever you think the best programs in the country are. They're not outsmarting Penn State with the staff that these guys have assembled. And I think when you get that type of football knowledge with the type of football talent that Penn State has, again, it's going to be close to an unbeatable combination, I think, going into the year.
Okay, you're new to Keystone Sports, Jeff, but I admire that you are ahead of the game here. I always ask for a bold prediction. Before I even had the chance to ask you, you've got play action pass going deep on the first play of the game. I love that. I hope Mike Yurcich is listening to our show. I'll go just to make it one step further. I'm going to say that pass goes to Amari Evans, okay? If you don't mind me stealing a little bit of your thunder with that pick. So now what's left is I need to hear your game score prediction. What do you have there, Jeff?
First of all, can I just say that I really hope Mike Yurcich is not listening to me for advice. I've always thought I'd be a great football coach because, listen, my advice on defense is stop them, make the tackle. And on offense, score the touchdown. And if these guys would follow that advice a little more regularly, they'd be in great shape. But, yeah, I don't think Mike Yurcich needs to be – tuning in to yours truly for offensive football genius. That being said, yeah, I just think West Virginia is, as I said, just completely overmatched in this game. I think it ends up being not a crazy score because I do think Penn State gets a lot of people into the game in the second half, but I have this being a 45-10 win for the Nittany Lions over the Mountaineers.
Very good. But you've also defined the other difference between you and I, Jeff. I do hope Mike Yurcich listens to us. What am I here for if I'm not giving him advice? All right. Mike, you heard it. I approve of Jeff's play call for first down. We'll see if that happens. Jeff, thanks very much. We've got a guest coming in for quarter four. Stay tuned for that.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. This is quarter four of our show. And as promised, a special guest from one of our favorite links, the ForTheBloggy.com. It is Shane Paul. Shane has been here before. Loved your stuff, Shane. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on again, Jim. Been too long, so excited to be back.
Well, it's great to have you. And we love all the stuff out of For the Bloggy. You guys always do those great deep dives into things, either the film from Coach Caduti, the analytics from yourself. And that's what we want to talk about, an article that you put out recently where you did kind of the deep dive into how Penn State's offense might change with the differences that they have in the backfield. And the two differences that you point out, one is that you have Drew Aller in there instead of Sean Clifford, different kind of quarterback. And even though the running backs are the same guys, these are now veterans. They're not the unproven guys that going into the season, you didn't know what you had. Let's start with Drew Aller. And before we get to how the offense might change with him in there, let's just talk about his traits themselves. How is Drew Aller a different quarterback than Sean Clifford?
Yeah, I mean, immediately the first thing that jumps off the tape and the first thing that everyone recognizes is the arm strength. Clifford, obviously, you know, he excelled in many things and, you know, you'll never hear a bad word about him out of my mouth, but arm strength probably wasn't a strong suit of his. So that limits you from a play calling standpoint at times. You can't out throw coverage at times and you can't take advantage of the entire field. So Drew Aller obviously possesses, you know, that 6'5", 230, I think, or maybe I think he's heavier than that now.
I believe so.
He just has a rocket ship attached to his shoulder, as we say. And so that's the number one thing. And then we can get into later as well as his vision, his ability to see the field and get through reads. The popular word now is processing. All the Twitter scouts like to throw that one around, talk about how well a quarterback processes. And last year he showed some, put some things on tape that shows that that's definitely also a strength of his.
Okay, now let's take a look at how the offense might change with Drew Aller in there at quarterback instead of Sean Clifford. Now, you've looked at some of the tapes of what Mike Yurcich has done in the past, especially with his Oklahoma State teams. Those were some interesting offenses. What is it we might expect to see differently now with Drew Aller in there instead of Sean Clifford?
The first thing I touch on in the article is wide splits. Anyone that watched Tennessee or watched any Josh Heupel or Art Briles offense in the past knows that they like to align their receivers almost on the sideline. Sometimes they'll split the difference between the numbers and the sideline, but you know it really stretches the field out and it looks unorthodox from a viewer's perspective. You know, it almost seems as if they're, you know, lined up out of bounds or something. But it puts tremendous stress on a defense. And it, the main thing is that it creates natural one-on-one matchups. So what does that mean? Even if you're playing zone, it doesn't matter. You know, you could have cover 3, 4, 6, you know, any coverage in the book called. But when there's only one defensive back, you know, within a 20-yard radius of a receiver, it's safe to assume that, you know, it's a one-on-one matchup. So what Tennessee likes to do, and you know, Yurcich, I'm sure will dabble in it this year, is that they'll RPO some stuff out of that. So, you know, at times you'll have the one-on-one on the outside, but the only potential player that can influence that throw is maybe like a safety lined up on the hash. So all they'll do is they'll read him. You know, if he inserts into the run fit or he, you know, takes a step in that direction, they'll throw a slant or a glance route, you know, right past his eardrum, and he'll never see it coming. And then it's just him in the corner racing to the end zone.
And I also think, Shane, many of us, when we think of that strong arm quarterback and stretching the defense, you think about it vertically. You think about getting a receiver over the top. That may be true, but also isn't there, by creating those wide splits, having that strong arm guy going east and west with your throws just as much as you're going north and south?
Absolutely. You see a lot of perimeter screens in today, and you know, Coach Yershitz, you know, he does a lot of that even last year with Clifford. But you know, you don't have to align one receiver wide. You can do two of them a yard apart, but you know, an inch from the sideline. So if you only get one out over those two receivers, only one defensive back out there, you can pop a screen out there all day, and that's, you know, that's 8 to 10 yards if it's blocked properly.
You also, in the article, I found interesting, could you tell us about the pure progression passing concept and how Drew Aller fits in that?
Yeah. So for starters, there's a couple different ways that passing concepts are designed. So a popular way is that you have, you know, say you're in a 2x2 formation, so two eligible receivers on both sides of the ball. You can have kind of a mirrored concept, so say a slant and a flat going on both sides. Quarterback will just pick a side. That's referred to as pick a side read. That can be based on, you know, matchups, can be based on coverage, really whatever the quarterback and the offensive staff feels comfortable with. But that limits you in a way. You know, you only have two routes really in your progression. But pure progressions, and Penn State did a little bit of this, but it certainly wasn't the heart and soul of their passing attack. But they'll have a concept that is read completely from left to right. So like you're reading a book or reading a book oppositely. You could have a fade in and out starting on the right, and then something like a drive concept, like a dig and a drag coming across the backside. So you'll start on the front and your read just scans across the field. And it's that obviously sounds very good on paper, but it's hard for quarterbacks to get through those kind of reads because you have to make it, because you got to keep in mind there's also a pass rush coming. So if you hang on a read too long, you know, that messes up with the timing and you can end up getting sacked pretty easily.
Well, I'm curious though, as you make that progression, let's say you are going left to right, that first option, do they make it set up so that that pass pattern that that receiver is running is quicker than the next guy, which is quicker than the third read, which is quicker than the fourth read, so that it is timed correctly for as the quarterback gets to that point on the field?
Yeah, so the backside reads or the backside routes are designed to come into the quarterback's vision, you know, and it's based on the philosophy that, okay, if the first read is taken away, that's probably because they did something that will open up the second read. If the second read's taken away, it's likely because they did something that will open up the third read. So that's kind of the philosophy behind the per progression passing attack.
Very good. It's going to be a lot of fun to see Drew Aller and how he progresses through the year. Now let's go. It's an interesting concept you brought up then with the running backs, which a year ago, both Nick Singleton, Catron Allen, true freshmen, nobody really, as highly regarded as they were, no one really knew what you were getting with the two of them at the start of the season. Now, another year in the program, obviously very talented, but now you have these two guys, they're veterans now. This is their second year in. What are we going to see different from them?
Well, hopefully they're on the field at the same time. I think that's what everybody wants. And I think I was watching the Adam Brenneman show, and I can't remember if it was the Nick Singleton or the Catron Allen interview, but one of them let the cat out of the bag that there is a 21 personnel package that has been installed throughout camp. So that's exciting. That means it definitely was a point of focus to get those two on the field at the same time. As for what they can do, we saw a clip during spring ball, or maybe it was camp, where they were working kind of a triple option RPO type look. That's something that, you know, is easy install. They kind of have run it before, but now they're doing it in a way that involves the two backs. You know, and as for what Yersich did at Oklahoma State, You know, it's a lot of, okay, we'll put this guy in, we'll put one of the backs in motion, have a run going down the middle. If a backer flies out with the screen, hand it off. If not, we can throw the screen. So many ways to skin a cat when you have two backs, but the biggest thing is that they both pose a threat to carry the ball at the same time.
And I think Mike Yursich is a type, you say, multiple ways to skin a cat. I think Mike Yursich is good at skinning the cat because you see different things. A year ago, it felt to me like he just said, I have two good running backs. I have three good tight ends. I'm going to get them all on the field. And the way to do that is with the T formation. Now, what you're talking about is different, having the two running backs, but not necessarily. You mentioned a 21 formation with two running backs, one tight end. You could also have two running backs with no tight ends if you still have, you know, the multiple wide receivers. Would that not, if you're using the wide receivers to spread the field, doesn't that also create some openings for the running backs too?
Absolutely. Yeah. You have to make what's called an apex defender. So, you know, a box safety or an outside linebacker that usually splits the difference between the tackle or the end of the line of scrimmage and the nearest slot receiver. You have to make them choose whether they want to defend run or pass. And even if they do choose to defend run, you know, they're usually coming from 10 to 15 yards away. So, you know, it's much more smart for a defense to just line the defender up in the box and make you, you know, the term pick your poison is thrown around a lot. And that's kind of what, you know, you got to force defenses to do. If you want to bring that star defender into the box, well then, all right, we're going to throw a slant right behind you. But if you want to keep him out there, then it's going to be a long day up front.
Gotcha. And when you say pick your poison, well, when you have two running backs that are definitely dangerous poison, as Penn State does, you want to get them involved more and more. One of the things I've been wondering about, you didn't see the running backs in the passing game so much last year. Is that another thing that you think we might see differently now that it's another year in the program for the two young running backs?
To be honest with you, I don't think route running is particularly a strength of either one of them. I mean, unless you got to keep in mind they were true freshmen last year, so you know you don't expect that to be developed right away. But I think the bones and the soul of their passing game will be in the flats, in the swing screen game. Excuse me. But just ways to get them the ball on the perimeter, that's pretty much a glorified run. But obviously you do have to still catch the ball.
Very good. You know, it's just going to be so much fun to see those young players, the two sophomore running backs, the sophomore quarterback, and hopefully it's a better offensive line this year, which will help everybody out. So it's going to be exciting to see. We'll start to see it against West Virginia. I'm not sure Mike Yursich is going to bring everything out that first game. As I think you and I talked about some of the things last year, even with the T formation, it took a good part of the season before we saw everything with it. I suspect that'll be the case again this year. Shane, thank you so much for coming on with us. We'll have to do it again real, real soon. And thank you all for listening to our show. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Hey, Penn State fans, here is your chance to take something off your bucket list. That's right. Go PSU RV is offering a full range of RV setups ready for a weekend of great tailgating at their Lions Den, which is the closest single game RV overnight lot to Beaver Stadium. You can arrive anytime Friday afternoon. Stay until Sunday morning, avoiding all that traffic. Don't miss this unique opportunity. Go online to gopsurv.com and reserve your RV today.